from Futuro Media and PRX. It's In the Thick. I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
And I'm Jamila King. And this is ITT Sound Off, featuring special guest, my dog, in the background. Very upset that someone had the audacity to ring a doorbell at 9 a.m.
Right when you were about to record. Don't worry about it. Yeah. What's the dog's name again?
Her name is Zora.
Zora. Welcome to In the Thick, Zora. Podcast about politics, race, and culture. So, yes, as you know, we always do the disclaimer, but, you know, we do record remotely, and sometimes we get Zora. I mean, Maria's Benito has barked on our show, so Zora is just, you know, part of the In the Thick family. So, anyway, let's get to it with our first topic, which is the latest with the midterms. It's official. On Wednesday, Republicans won a slim majority in the House of Representatives. The exact number of seats each party will hold is still unconfirmed, as a few races remain too close to call. But then other big news, on Thursday, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi also announced she would not be seeking a leadership role in the new Congress, though she would continue to serve as a member.
This I will continue to do as a member of the House, speaking for the people of San Francisco, serving the great state of California, and defending our Constitution. And with great confidence in our caucus, I will not seek re-election to Democratic leadership in the next Congress. For me, the hour has come for a new generation to lead the Democratic caucus that I so deeply respect. And I'm grateful that so many are ready and willing to shoulder this awesome responsibility.
Hmm. And I'm kind of like the New York Post, where it's like, you know, Florida man runs for president, see page 28, whatever. Former President Donald Trump announced his plans to run for re-election from his Florida residence at Mar-a-Lago. Only a few Republican leaders were in attendance, and Fox News and other networks didn't even air his full address. But it just feels like, here we go again. Like, what the hell? Like,
yeah,
it's like that uninvited. It's like, get out of my goddamn house. Like, you've overstayed your welcome. Right? You know what I'm saying? Like, that person's like, yeah, I'm only going to stay here for a day. And then they wind up staying for like years. So what do you think of all this, Jamila?
Yeah. I mean, Julio, look, I think that, like you said, Florida man does something weird and dumb is not, you know, news necessarily, but this is news. You know, Donald Trump, I think he's running in a very different climate than he did in 2016, even 2020. And I think that, you know, the congressional elections were a referendum on Trumpism. And I think resoundingly, voters voted against another sort of like foray into Trumpism. And so we'll see if that sticks. You know, I think the economy is in a place where you never know what's going to happen. You know, it's going to be a shit show. You know, it's going to be a shit show.
Yeah. Do you think that's why Nancy Pelosi's like,
I'm out.
I'm like, I'm fucking out.
Not doing it again.
I got to worry about my husband.
Right.
I think the attack on her husband obviously would impact anybody.
Right.
God forbid if anything happened to my partner. I don't know what I'd be doing. Right. So I would think it's part of that.
Right.
But at the same time, she's also probably like, why am I going to have to deal with these crazy people, right? Marjorie Taylor Greene, who's already comparing the border quote-unquote crisis to the war in Ukraine. Do you see this quote? She said, let's compare that to how many Russians have invaded Ukraine.
I think the American people and the taxpayers of this country deserve to know why the Biden administration and this Congress is so interested in funding the protection of Ukraine's border and not the protection of our border.
Oh my God. It's like, did you not get the memo, Marjorie Taylor Greene? Americans, they didn't vote for extremism.
Right.
But thoughts on this or anything else?
Yeah. So there were a lot of really potentially exciting developments in this last election. Karen Bass, a Black woman who's served LA for a long time.
Yeah.
Is the new mayor elect. And as I like to say, Black woman gets LA's worst job. But, you know, I think it is a very big achievement given the racial and gender dynamics of that city. She beat Rick Caruso, who was sort of like the celebrity real estate mogul elite pick. So, you know, I think there's really exciting stuff happening in LA, like always. And so that is kind of a brighter spot.
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens with that.
Yeah. And also, I don't want the media to start patting its back about the Florida man announcement. But, you know, there was a good tweet by NPR breaking Donald Trump, who tried to overthrow the results of the 2020 presidential election and inspired a deadly riot at the Capitol in a desperate attempt to keep himself in power, has filed to run for president again in 2024. But I also think, as much as people are getting, oh, great NPR for doing that or whatever, or other outlets, you're still going to play the game with Trump. I mean, yes, I mentioned the New York Post, and Rupert Murdoch is reportedly saying that he's not even going to be near Donald Trump. You know, and his company owns the Post, the Wall Street Journal, obviously Fox News. But I actually think in the end, this is what Republicans, this is the deal they made. And they had an opportunity to reject this in 2015, 16, and they can't shake this guy. Final thoughts on this?
Look, I think people are fed up, but we'll see how fed up in another iteration of the shit show that is American national politics.
That was the shit show that is American national politics.
Moving on to our second topic. So we want to acknowledge the horrific shooting that happened on Sunday at the University of Virginia, where three Black football players were killed. Devin Chandler, Lavelle Davis Jr., Deshaun Perry, and two others were injured. Earl Sims, who was Deshaun Perry's high school football coach, spoke at a news conference on Wednesday. Let's listen.
Deshaun was a beautiful soul whom I, among many, had the privilege of meeting. If you look at his picture, and if you just came in contact with him, his smile would light up a room. I echo the sentiments of several of my colleagues when I say that Deshaun was a delightful, respectful, hardworking person who was one of the best overall young men our communities had to offer. Sure, he was an athletic, three-sport athlete with a high motor and a fierce competitive nature, but he was also, to his core, kind, thoughtful, and caring.
It's what's sad.
It's awful, man.
Oh, it's breaking my heart.
It's just tragic, and our thoughts are with families, the students, and the staff at UVA. Gun violence has been a huge issue in this country and something that was top of mind for so many folks recently after the mass shooting in Buffalo, New York, and Uvalde, Texas. Now, we saw in the midterms how people turned out in big numbers to secure abortion rights across the country.
Right.
But when it came to gun legislation, voters were more split. In Iowa, they voted to enshrine the right to bear arms in their constitution. But in Oregon, a gun control initiative passed that would require a permit to buy a gun and would ban large capacity magazines. Of course, federal gun legislation was passed earlier this summer, but it doesn't ban any weapons.
Right.
So, you know, very useful. And we know that many Republican state legislatures have refused to enact legislation to combat gun violence. So, Julio, what do you think?
I mean, when you were sharing the contrast between abortion rights and gun control, it's like abortion rights, boom, people came out to protect that right. The worshiping of gun culture in this country is just, I don't think it's ever going away, Jamila.
Yeah. I mean,
it's enshrined.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm really struggling. Where, how does this even get resolved? The UVA situation, horrifically tragic. One of my son's college soccer teammates, he's from Virginia, and you don't realize how much the tragedy really impacts so many people, right? It's not just UVA, it's the community, it's the people in Virginia, it's anyone that has ties to a place like UVA, which is, you know, the premier college in the state of, in the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, I'm just done crying and feeling heartbroken. And is this what we have to accept, right?
Right. I mean,
is there any courage here, do you think? I mean, seriously.
No. So, you know, I think the details that come out of this are just increasingly heartbreaking. From the Washington Post, which has been doing really great on the ground reporting on this story, the suspect is a student named Christopher Darnell Jones Jr. He didn't talk to other students when he was on this field trip that they were returning from. I think it's important to note that, you know, this person is Black. The victims are Black. They were in a class that was about African-American theater. They'd gone to a field trip to see an African-American play.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
I suspect that there's some serious mental health stuff that's going on with this potential suspect.
Yeah.
But, you know, either way, it's so easy to get a gun. Clearly he had a gun. He has a history of talking about his ability to get a gun. And, you know, now you have three families that are left in mourning. There's, you know, at least one family, two families who are dealing with loving a family member with severe injuries from gun violence. We definitely don't talk about that enough, about, right, you know, sort of the mental, but also the physical and financial tolls of gun violence. So,
yeah, yeah.
It's truly devastating, Julio. And I really do hope that, you know, we're coming up on 10 years after Sandy Hook, right?
Yeah.
10-year anniversary is coming up in December. And I think the thing, the turning point with that shooting was like, if a bunch of children, 6 and 7 year olds, you know, were gunned down and that didn't really prompt any major legislative change.
Yeah, it's not.
What will?
Just breaks my heart. It's, you know, young black men, even in places where you quote unquote make it.
Right.
That's the part where just, it's just so fucking unfair.
Yeah.
And like, I feel the debate is so simplified and I'm glad you deepened it because it is such a, there's such, you know, lasting consequences. But this country is not going to change until it stops loving its guns. And I don't see that happening.
We've got to love our people more than our guns, and we just don't.
Hi, it's Maria Hinojosa, host of Latino USA. We all love great stories. And great stories are what we pride ourselves in delivering to you every week. Latino USA presents a mix of reporting on culture and politics, diverse voices, and coverage of current and emerging issues, featuring stories from the heart, stories that will make you think and maybe even inspire you. Listen to Latino USA on your favorite podcast app from PRX.
Let's move on to our final topic, which is the FIFA World Cup, which kicks off on Sunday, November 20th, as anything FIFA and world soccer related. First of all, there's a great documentary called FIFA Uncovered on Netflix. Go watch it. Just fantastic. You know, getting into the politics surrounding this global event and where the games are being held this time around, Doha, Qatar, right? First of all, human rights violations. Country built, you know, new stadiums in preparation for this. Hundreds of thousands of migrant workers were brought in to help build the infrastructure. Many working under horrific conditions and performing dangerous work in extreme heat. Human rights organizations have said thousands of people have died. And in just one example, Nepali labor officials have said that over 2,100 workers from Nepal alone have died in Qatar since 2010. That's just one country.
Right.
And there's also been criticisms of Qatar's law, which criminalizes homosexuality. So Dr. Nasser Mohammed is the first Qatari to publicly come out as gay. And he spoke to Football Daily about the urgency of keeping attention on Qatar's anti-LGBTQ government, especially after the games end. Let's take a listen.
I really think that after this year, we have to have a way to continue to bring visibility to what's happening inside Qatar. And now I hope everybody knows that the generic statements from Qatari officials are not reflective of what's happening in Qatar.
All right, Jamila, I am super conflicted because, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen my Twitter, but I always list like my favorite sports.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for me, it's like baseball and soccer are 1 and 1A, then basketball, hockey. Football's like 10.
Mm.
I just have never been really into football as much. I'm into the original football, which is soccer.
Yeah.
And so I'm conflicted about this entire thing. But what are your thoughts about the World Cup?
So kind of the opposite of you, Julio. I grew up as a huge football fan. And in recent years, for various reasons, I've decided to kind of move away from the game of American football. So I'm determined to get into the original football, aka soccer.
It's the best fucking sport in the world. I play it. My son plays it. There's a reason why I love it so much, but I am conflicted. I mean, I'm going to be watching every friggin' World Cup game in a country that, you know, has serious issues.
So I've been digging into just like logistically how this is going to work. Of course, you know, I was confused when I first heard that the World Cup was happening in November. I was like, isn't this a summer thing? But it has to happen in November because temperatures in Qatar in the summer are well above 115, 120 degrees. And the way that this is supposed to happen is all of these migrant workers have built.
Yeah.
The idea is that they are air-conditioned stadiums that are collapsible and somehow transportable to other countries. And
right.
So I'm just, one, I don't know how that's going to work. I literally cannot visualize it. But, you know, also, I'm not a World Cup athlete, but I do move my body occasionally. And you know, there is something called recovery and, you know, just the toll that you put on a body. And so a lot of these professional athletes are coming from their club teams, coming from their
yeah.
various countries with very little time between competition and then gearing up for the World Cup where you're playing a bunch of games in relatively short, you know, intervals. And so it's, I fear that we're going to have a lot of injuries.
I think you've raised a good point about that on the sports side. A lot of these guys are in form, but it is a different playing schedule because, and not to get too geeky, you know, they're used to playing right now their club game on the weekend. And maybe if they're in the one of the top league championships in Europe, they're playing during the week. Here, you're absolutely right. Like in this sense, they're going to be playing like three games over the course of maybe, I believe, like a couple of weeks. And if you advance, you're playing another couple more games. And then they have to come back to their club teams.
Right.
And you're like, sorry, did this just become a sports podcast? Should we? Is this a Bleacher Report all of a sudden?
Right. But so to get back to the politics surrounding the game, you know, I think this has brought a spotlight to Qatar. I think that they didn't want when they originally made this bid way back in the 2010s. And so, you know, I do think that there's been either this has prompted really important discussion around labor practices, not only there, but like in various countries in the world, and, you know, sort of repressive regimes and anti-LGBT legislation. And
yeah,
like these are very, very important discussions to have that we have every 4 years around the World Cup and the Olympics. And that's good.
Well, here's a thought for FIFA. Well, they're, you know, corrupt. You know, they have, I mean, you got to watch FIFA on coverage before the World Cup because it'll give you a really good perspective on going into this tournament, right? And I think Grant Wall, the Sports Illustrated soccer writer, said this on his podcast. Maybe it's time to not offer major global sporting events to authoritarian regimes. Like, let's just start there. But if people don't use the World Cup to call attention to some of these oppressive policies, then it's a lost opportunity. But I will give it to my U.S. men's national team. I'm actually, I love this team. I've been watching them since the 80s. So I'm one of those guys, right? And I love the fact that they put up a rainbow theme logo at their training facility in Qatar. Sort of a little trolling. Mm-hmm. So I think it'll be interesting. There will be problems, but I have every game queued up. And I told my wife, I said, I might be watching while I do work. I might be watching at night, but I'm watching a lot of soccer the next month. So there you go. All right, Jamila, thank you for being on, and thanks to Zora for joining us as well.
You know, she works hard.
I know. I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
And I'm Jamila King.
Uno, dos, tres!
All right, remember, go to Apple Podcasts to rate and review us because it really, really helps. And you can listen to In the Thick on all the major podcast platforms. Check us out on the web at inthethick.org. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at In the Thick Show. Yes, we're still on Twitter, everybody. You know, unless it imploded by the time you're listening to this show. We are also on Facebook, and you can tell your friends while you're sharing holiday meals next week. And yeah, follow Jamila King's amazing work as managing editor for BuzzFeed News. Okay, why did I do that like an NBA announcer? But there it is. In the Thick is produced by Noor Saudi, Harsha Nahata, and our New York Women's Foundation Ignite Fellow, Daniela Tello Garzon. Our editorial director is Fernanda Santos. Our audio engineering team is Stephanie LeBeau, Julia Caruso, Gabriela Baez, and JJ Carubin. Our marketing manager is Luis Luna. The music you heard is courtesy of Nacional, kept in ZZK Records. We'll see you next time. Thank you for listening.
Goal!
All right, that's the way I'm ending mine. Thanks, Jamila. Thanks for being on.
All right, thanks, Julio, and the whole team, and stay safe, y'all.
Man, you're just spot on. I think, like, your dog kind of inspired you, was your muse.
You know, she always inspires me, Julio, but really right now she's inspiring me to be, like, laser focused because
yeah,
I keep thinking about the fact that someone had the audacity to ring my doorbell multiple times.
On a Friday morning.
At 9 o'clock on a Friday morning.
The opinions expressed by the guests and contributors in this podcast are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Futuro Media or its employees.